Hi there, folks, and welcome or welcome back to Nippon Trading International's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima again, and this podcast is brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis of realestate.jp. He's a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families who are looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for over two decades now. And for about half of that time, he's been buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in Tokyo on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So he's got dedicated loan officers in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener of the podcast, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions, which means that you're already aware of the fact that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on sales@realestate.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options. All right, so apologies for the bit of radio silence there. Got a bunch of good reasons for that, although they're not really an excuse. The main one being that, drum roll, we've just opened early bird registrations for the next Japan Real Estate Summit, which will be held Saturday, 6th April in Tokyo. We're still sorting out the venue, so tickets will still be a few days to go on sale, but we're giving you the chance to pre-register your interest and secure an early bird discount if you do so. So this offer will only be available for a few days though, again, just until tickets officially go on sale, which will be very, very soon. So hop over to our website, nippontradings.com. That's N-I-P-P-O-N tradings with an S, nippontradings.com, all one word. There's a link to the registration page at the very top, and we'll also link to it, of course, in this episode's show notes. Put in your name, email address today to ensure you get the discounted price. Now, this will be a day-long event, this time 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., plenty more time for networking and chats with experts, like-minded individuals, all the good stuff that we've had in all of the previous summits, people who are just into Japan's property market for various reasons, like yourselves. Hopefully more presentations as well this time, lunch and after party, you name it. Plus, of course, all of your favorite speakers will be there. Emil Gorgis, who as always will speak of various financing strategies and choosing the right home for your family. Blanca Kobayashi, who missed the last event but is now back with a vengeance, and she will speak about how to choose the right renovation company and the right budget for your project. Anton Warman, back by popular demand, who will dig into the ins and outs of DIY renovation projects and how to keep your budget low and your hospitality property profitable as a result. Tracy Northcott, who will dig into the differences between a minpaku or casual short-term stay license and the comprehensive hotel or yokan license, as well as on how to switch between the two as needed. And of course, yours truly, and I'll be speaking about how to create and maintain relationships with Japanese property professionals, as well as on how to pick the right ones for your investment portfolio, what to do when they fail to perform, and everything involved in these cultural and professional nuances. So yeah, the Japan Real Estate Summit Spring 2024 session, 6th April, Saturday. And as always, this promises to be the best real estate event out there, hands down. And we have streaming tickets as well for those of you who can't make it in person, which are also discounted for early bird registrants, by the way. So hop over to nippontradings.com. Register for your early bird discount as soon as you can before the fully priced official tickets go on sale. And again, this will only be in a few days from the time you're listening to this. All right, so for today's episode, these are, again, two back-to-back conversations on two topics of interest, one related to U.S. military personnel who are living in Japan, and the other to Akiya, vacant home purchases and deal analysis. So in this first conversation, with a really nice guy from Okinawa by the name of William, we talk about the SOFA visa and how it might be potentially leveraged and used to qualify for a property loan or not, living quarters allowances for military personnel, which could potentially again be used for purchase or mortgage payments as opposed to only rentals, how foreign exchange rates affect these allowances, and some potential creative solutions for people who are interested in borrowing while stationed here in Japan, such as seller financing, private money lending, Japanese lenders, as well as the US or other offshore lenders. Real nice brainstorming session on all things related to US military personnel and attached civilians who may be in the market for a Japanese property purchase. Enjoy the conversation, and I'll see you again right after this.
Okay, cool. So yep. I've read through your email. You were talking about is that equal to the SOFA allowance? Is that the same sort of setup?
SOFA is Status of Forces Agreement, so that allows me to stay here and work for the U.S. government in Japan. It did. I've since retired recently. But my living quarters allowance is a separate stream of income from my regular salary was.
Okay.
And so living quarters is really to pay for rent, utilities, or if you wish to apply that towards the purchase of a home. So, yes, there's some flexibility there.
And who's eligible for that?
Well, if you're a CONUS employee that is hired in the States to work here, pretty much anybody that's a CONUS hire, Continental U.S. hire, is entitled to that. So, for example, most of the teachers I know still working here, they receive their regular salary based on years' experience and number of degrees earned, plus their LQA. And their LQA is calculated by the U.S. State Department, and it fluctuates every 2 weeks, sometimes based upon the exchange rate. So for Japan, it would be how many yen can a dollar buy? And if the yen is strong and the dollar doesn't buy many yen, then we get more dollars in our LQA. But if the yen is weak, kind of like it is now, we get fewer dollars.
Right. So that's not available. I'm not really familiar with the terms. That's not available to military personnel, to enlisted personnel, only to employed civilians?
I think that enlisted who live off base also get a living quarters allowance. I don't know that I'm not sure what they refer to. If you're active duty military, you get that living quarters allowance, but you get it as a bulk payment. And you don't have to, you get it, they give it to you, they assume you're going to need it. They don't ask for any reconciliation or accounting of that money. So, the military who live off base do get an allowance. It's just referred to differently and given differently. But yes, they do. So there are many active duty military members that live around us here who receive housing allowance, either to rent a home or to rent a mansion or rent an apartment.
But they can't get it in bulk and buy a home, can they?
It comes to them in their paychecks, just like it came to me in my paycheck every 2 weeks. So bi-weekly. So, for example, I can only speak for my own situation,
yep.
What it was recently. So for Okinawa, the living quarters allowance for me with my husband, married, would be right now $43,600 U.S. dollars per year. And that can be applied towards rent or purchase.
Rent or purchase, so mortgage payments would qualify if it was a loan, but you couldn't get it in cash to buy it outright.
No, that's why I contacted you. To go to a Japanese bank, and they'll look at you as a gaijin, and they'll say, well, forget it.
Yeah.
So even though I might be making $100,000 a year, and even though I might have another $50,000 a year to spend on housing, the Japanese would not look at me. So that's why I contacted you. I was able to build this home that I'm sitting in here right now and buy the land because the builder, Kian Kansetsu here in Okinawa, acted as both the builder and the banker. So they made money off the building and they made money off the banking, which was fine because that was the only game in town and kind of still is. Except whereas I paid 6.5% interest, I think they've gone up to 10% now. Kian has.
Ouch.
And okay. That puts it out of the range of two.
And I'm wondering what kind of insight I can offer you on that, to be honest. I mean, we're definitely not in a position to be lending money to people, even if we do get it, even if we do get it in good terms. Just because, I mean, if and when we have to foreclose or we have payment issues or any sort of legal requirements, this is not something that we really want to start understanding and or practicing, to be honest.
Right. Get you there. I totally get you. I, at one point, many years ago, I approached some mainland banks and even an Australian bank in Tokyo, based in Tokyo. And I was told, well, yes, if you lived in the Tokyo area, the Kanto area, we could loan you the money, but you live in Okinawa. So because we lived kind of out in the country, I believe in their opinion, they would not extend the loan. So it's not like I haven't pursued a few avenues down the years. But just nothing really panned out. Now, and I guess that's pretty much my take on things here for the likes of me. Whereas, you know, had I not been so fortunate as to get the loan from the builder, we would still be renting. Or, yeah, I would still be renting rather than owning the house.
I mean, I've been in touch with some customers in the past, just floating the idea for them to maybe provide sort of owner financing and help people in that way, but they were not really too thrilled with the returns on that, because if they charge, you're saying 6.5%, I think at the time we were talking about 4 or 5%, they could invest in something with far less complexity to make that kind of return. So I don't know who I could convince to do that, to be honest.
Okay, very good. No, I agree. And that's good insight for me to know that people out there that might otherwise have the money to loan just have better opportunities elsewhere to make money off of what they have.
I mean, it's really similar to what in the States is popular, like a note investment, right? Essentially.
Zev, I don't know about note investments. That I'm not familiar with that vehicle.
You're basically picking up a mortgage from a lender and then turning that into your own kind of loan. And I know that people are getting into that because, to be honest, in the States, litigation is a kind of normal part of life. So people are not as concerned about it. But the people who come to invest here, many of them, even if they are from the US, are doing that exactly because they don't want to be in that sort of environment, right? They are not interested in pursuing these avenues if and when they have to.
Okay.
So I'm not sure. I mean, what did you have in mind? What did you think would be an option?
Well, I was just putting out feelers. As far as an option, I knew that 10, 20 years ago, I was in a financial position to pull this off. Of course, realizing I know myself pretty well and I'm a pretty good risk, I understand that the bankers don't see that when I walk through the door.
No.
Or with anybody who I was approaching. But I think it's not as much for me as it is friends who are still in the situation where all this money is going towards rent, when in fact it could be going towards the purchase of a home. I understand that in England, in Germany, in the Netherlands, for an American like myself, a teacher to go into a bank and getting a loan is not a big deal.
Yeah.
And it happens frequently. And these people who are fortunate enough to live in the Netherlands or Germany or Belgium, they're able to get a loan and they're able to build and or buy there. So I was just seeking any kind of insight into how that might be accomplished in Japan. One thing, and this is a bigger picture, Ziv, and it doesn't apply to me specifically at all, you know, but I understand that there are a lot of people, foreigners, coming into Japan now because Japan just does not have a workforce does not have the young workforce that it needs to keep the country running. Whereas it's appealing to, you know, young, ambitious folks from overseas. Well, you know, if the banking industry in Japan is closed to those individuals too, good luck. You know, if you're looking to advise young people coming over and working in your country, you cannot treat them like foreigners. You have to open up your doors and say, hey, you know, we want you to stick around. This is what we're going to do for you.
Oh, no, the options are there. The thing is with military staffers or people who are employed by foreign companies, doesn't even have to be the U.S. Government, is that the banks are very aware that, I mean, we don't think about it that way, but from their perspective, at the drop of a hat, they could be relocated elsewhere and then not really care about the remaining obligations in Japan, right? There are Shinsei Investment and Finance lets non-residents borrow as long as they set up a local company for this purpose, but that's strictly for investment properties. Okay. There's a Singapore bank, UBS does that, again, only for investment properties, but you don't have to set up a company. They'll only lend for condos, though, as far as I'm aware, not for landed property. Okay. And I mean, rates are definitely better than 6-6.5%. It's more like somewhere between 2.5 to 4.
Right.
But I'm just trying to wrap my head around how that kind of thing might work. So maybe somebody who is eligible for a loan, and people who live in Japan on any sort of long-term visa that's not, that are employed by a Japanese company and earning money in Japan, can qualify, even if they're not a PR yet. A lot of lenders will consider them if they look like they're on the route to a PR. So maybe an investor who is eligible borrows, and then they have some sort of owner financing agreement with the person who actually wants to buy. That's one possible workaround if people might be interested. And then they, but again, they'll be making just the difference between whatever they charge their borrower and what the bank charges them. So again, it's not going to be more than 3-3.25%, right? So again, not attractive, I guess. Mm-hmm. It's a bit of a conundrum, isn't it? Now, if you've been following this podcast for a while, and in particular our JREP sessions, you're probably more than familiar with Blanca Kobayashi of Arc Reform. They're a bilingual renovation company serving clients in the Kanagawa and Kanto area, so Tokyo, Chiba, Saitama, Kawasaki, Yokohama. They can handle simple, small-scale projects as well as full house renovations, and they will work with you on the perfect design for your dream family home. But not only homes, Arc Reform also handle commercial property renovations, offices, restaurants, bars, shops, you name it, from traditional classics to the latest trends in interior design and renovations. So you want to email them for a free consultation and quote at info@arcreform.com. That's ARKReform, all one word, .com, and give your home or commercial space the love and care that it deserves.
Well, yes and no. I see your point about anybody that attaches to the military that can be, as you say, pulled out of here at the drop of a hat. You know, for folks like me, civilian, not truly military, although I attach to the military, movement is much less common. You know, so we're kind of here. We're here for a while.
How do we explain that to the banks, though?
Exactly. No, you would not be able to explain that to the banks. Mm-hmm. No. No, that's one of the finer points that they, it wouldn't matter to them. Well, Ziv, thank you very much for letting me bounce those.
No, pleasure. But wait, let me brainstorm a bit more. How about U.S. lenders? Would that be an option to maybe hook up with them and come up with a product that they could? I mean, they'd be definitely more willing on that. If the person ends up, you know, returning from Japan to the U.S., they can still pursue them, right?
They could, although they would have an issue with, okay, well, we're not actually, don't have feet on the ground there in Japan to look at this property, to understand the valuations of things. They might not be as familiar with, say, with the exchange rates and how that all works, dollars to yen. So, yeah, but that's a very good point. I've never really explored U.S. lenders.
Definitely the ones who have an international presence, even better if they have a presence in Japan, at least there'd be somebody to talk to about it maybe, right? But I'm completely unfamiliar. I barely know decision makers at Japanese banks, let alone in the US. I'm not sure how to even approach that one.
Okay. Yeah, but your mentioning of Singapore UBS might be actually a good starting point. Not, as you say, not for landed property from your understanding, but at least for condos, you know, that would be for a lot of people quite fine.
Yeah, as long as the housing, so you're saying there's no compliance? I know, like for the sofa, the housing department, the housing office requires certain criteria that only certain properties can meet to provide. It does not work like that?
If you're renting, yes. I think that the properties have to meet certain regs, but if you're buying, no.
Okay, Well, that would be definitely something. Then maybe yes, maybe UBS would be an option. That one I do have somebody in contact with there. So if we can maybe flesh out a bit of a plan, that could be interesting to bring to them.
Okay, very good. Because Lord knows there's plenty of condominiums around here. They just keep popping left and right.
I mean, the only thing would be how to qualify that as an investment loan, because the person borrowing is borrowing to live in it. Mm. There would have to be some sort of, again, a workaround to make that feasible as an investment loan.
Okay. So even with Singapore, they look at the purchase of the condo as an investment. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes. It has to be an investment loan, and it's given to an individual or individuals, not to a company. So that makes it a little bit easier, but it still has to be an investment loan. So it needs to show them a certain yield on paper. How you would reach that yield, I'm not sure.
Okay. Got you. Well, I guess that yield would be the spread between, I don't know. Obviously, if I was willing to fork out 6.5% at the time, you know, if there's a spread between 6.5% or whatever, and what they can actually loan the money at, that would be their income. But I, you know, I'm no banker. I don't understand the ins and outs of that.
No, same here. But it's interesting. And also, I mean, again, thank you for letting me record this. I think once we publish this, people will jump in with comments and maybe ideas of their own, or maybe even a potential investor who will pick up the gauntlet. We'll see how we go.
Very, very good. Well, I appreciate that, Ziv, very much. It's been good to talk to you.
Same here. Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much. Take care.
Bye-bye. So, really good talk with Will there. Not a huge amount of actionable items yet, unfortunately, but hopefully this would help ignite those creative juices of yours, our dedicated listeners. We would love to hear from you if you think of some solutions or you want to be part of these solutions. Don't be shy to share your thoughts in the comments section or reach out directly for a chat. All right, so for our second conversation today, this is a conversation with a couple from Australia, new clients of ours, although they weren't yet clients at the time of this recording. And we talk about IKEA purchases for the purposes of using these vacant homes as holiday or even permanent family homes in Japan. We do some live reviews and deal analysis on a few of these properties. So if you're listening to the audio version of this episode and you do have the option, you might want to hop over to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/Japan_real_estate, or just click on the video link in the show notes. We analyze each of these potential properties from a variety of aspects, including renovations, ongoing maintenance and repair costs, how these are related to the size and the age of the properties, location considerations, proximity to major roads and how that might affect noise levels, yard maintenance, landscaping expenses, how to handle the application due diligence process the right or the Japanese way, how open and accommodating are Japanese sellers to foreign buyers, and probably one of the more important topics, how does the IKEA Bank purchase process differ from a normal property purchase directly from a brokerage? Also, we talk about how and when do we organize property viewings for clients, remote or in person, and just how long does everything take in general, how fluid and fast or slow moving the vacant homes market is here in Japan, and a whole bunch of other topics of interest. So enjoy the conversation, and I'll see you one last time on the other side.
Oh, no worries.
Yeah, so do you want to start with your questions first or the properties first? Or
what would you like?
Maybe the properties first.
Yep, no worries. So yeah. I will open them up and share my screen. Give me a second. And I want to share that. You seeing that?
Yeah.
Yes. Yep.
Okay. Awesome. So that was, let's have a quick look. 1971. Okay.
Yes.
Looks like
it was a bit of an awkward age, really. But
looks like it was renovated recently.
Mm.
This being well, oh no, definitely renovated. Okay. I'll just scroll up a bit. Let me just look at the photos, the static ones. Okay. It's in very good shape for a house this old.
Yeah.
It looks nice.
12 rooms, though. Are you up for maintenance costs on 12 rooms?
Yeah, it is quite big. We do have questions about ongoing maintenance, I think, for different size houses, I guess.
Yeah. So, I mean, this one's it's built to look traditional, but it's a modern build. So at least it doesn't require any, I don't know. Some of the features might require specialty professionals.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess the bones at least are probably modern build. But I mean, just the size of it, what's that in meters? Let me just scroll. Where did that go? Oh, I mean, the photos page, sorry. Yeah, it's huge, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
It's a big house, yeah.
Look, we normally say, worst case, on average, $4,000 Australian or US, whatever the case may be. US, a year in maintenance costs if it's over, let's say, 30, 40 years old. But with the size of this one, I'd expect it to be a bit more than that. I mean, again, on average, you'll have some years where nothing has to be done. But then when, you know, the roof goes on something as big as that, it's not going to be 20, 30,000. It's going to be more like 60, 70,000, right?
Yeah.
It's beautiful, though. I don't know how much of
it is.
How much of, you know, labor of love and financial labor of love are you willing to put into it?
I think the main concern with this one, when we look at Street View, the overpass of the, which it's some expressway, major expressway.
Yeah.
Is you can see it.
It's like two houses away. Yeah.
And I just have no understanding of how much noise it would actually be.
Let me just bring up the location. Which one's the actual? Oh, that's the actual address, isn't it? At least the approximate. But that doesn't look to me like a full address. It looks like an approximate address, I think. So.
Yeah, we have the house
exactly. Yeah, I wonder if I can find.
Yeah, see, that's a huge area.
Yeah, I'll just bring up the pin that found. It's
on that white road flowing south, just below the freeway there, the expressway.
Over here?
Yeah, up a little higher. Yeah, kind of.
But this is the freeway. This is just a normal model. Not to say that it's necessarily going to be quiet there, but let me just see, where does that freeway go?
Kind of between Suzuka and
That's going to Nagoya, so that's going to have some pretty significant traffic on it for sure. That one, yeah. I mean, the actual motorway, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Are you seeing my map as well, or just the house?
No, I can see that. I'm just trying to find the actual one that we've got.
If you zoom in on the intersection of the freeway and that white road, the house is almost on that intersection.
Okay. It'll definitely be noisy for sure, and the trucks go on all through the night as well. It's not like it quiets down.
Okay.
What was the price on that one? Sorry, let me just have a look.
So I think it's
1580.
I mean, look, for the size of the house and the size of the land, and I guess that I'm not a structural inspector, and even they wouldn't be able to tell just by looking at pictures, but assuming it's in good shape, the price is good. Like, this is a good price for a house and land of this size. But again, location is a concern, and noise-wise, I mean, location is a concern, and maintenance-wise, the bigger the house, the more you're going to be paying. Even if it's good shape when you buy it, and we don't know that yet until we do a structural inspection, but even if it's good shape when you buy it, you'll still have those good few thousand bucks a year on average in maintenance.
In terms of the other one, there's not very much, like, they haven't provided a floor plan.
The other one, you sent me four. Which one on the list? Number two?
Oh, sorry, number two, which is Tokushima.
So, oh, that's sold. Oh, no, it's not. Sorry. What's that? Pardon me, my Japanese written Japanese skills are not nearly as good as my spoken Japanese skills. Oh, I thought that was a comment that usually looked what it looks like when it's sold. Okay, so beautiful.
It is beautiful.
Okay, you'll have some forest maintenance there too, from the looks of it. I'm not sure how much of that land is yours. I guess the forest around, like what I'm seeing here, where was that?
It does say in the description there is a little bit of forest and farmland attached.
Okay, so that might be the forest that they were referring to, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay, and then...
It obviously needs some work.
Come back. Okay, not as well maintained as the previous one, I guess.
Hmm.
At least, okay, not as many pictures as well. I see what you mean.
No.
And that was built 1972, so similar age. But I mean, the size of it definitely looks much more manageable. Yeah.
Yeah. In terms of, so this one is Tokushima, just outside of the city, about 20 minutes or so. Have you ever had issues with, say, people not selling to foreigners in your experience?
Yeah. Some of them are stubborn. I'd say about 15-20%. Either the agent is just, it's too much hassle, or the seller just has some bias against foreigners, usually because they had some experience with potential Chinese buyers. They're the ones who tend to submit offers and then run away, kind of thing.
Okay.
But I mean, Obviously, we've spoken about this. One of the reasons we charge people in advance for the first purchase is exactly to avoid that. So our customers specifically have not done that, but I know that occasionally Americans and I guess Australians could happen as well, just submit 5, 6, 7 offers and then just ghost them once they found the one that they're going ahead with. So if the seller has some kind of bias against that, then yes, they sometimes do refuse.
Now, here's some big news for anyone interested in Akiya, the abandoned vacant homes that are abundant all around Japan for very attractive purchase prices. Akiya Mart, our latest sponsor, is a recently founded online search and discovery tool for Japanese real estate. Its user interface will be very familiar to users of Zillow or Redfin. The platform essentially scouts the internet for property listings, translates them into English, and displays prices in US dollars, all in one place and with a dynamic map interface that makes browsing, finding, and shortlisting your favorite properties a piece of cake. Which any of you have been struggling with the dozens, if not hundreds, of Japanese property websites that are available online and their very clunky interface will probably find a real blessing. They've got already over 500,000 listings on the platform, and the database is expanding daily. Ranging from abandoned rural homes to luxury urban properties, Akiya Mart makes it easy to find your dream home in Japan, regardless of your budget. Now, while the platform is essentially free for use, here's an exclusive offer for listeners of the podcast. You can use the promo code NTI to receive $5 off Akiya Mart Pro. The subscription will unlock a bunch of very attractive features for you, including unrestricted access to the entire nationwide property database and a whole range of filters, which will help power charge your search for that elusive perfect home and make it even easier. So hop over to akiya-mart.com. That's AKIYA-MART, akiya-mart.com, and kick off your search today. Some local municipalities as well, if they're on some kind of, urban rural rejuvenation path, they only want families who are actually going to be settling in full time. So sometimes if it's listed on an Akiya bank, the local municipality might refuse. But this one looks like it's on a normal property website. So hopefully that's not the case.
Yeah. And on that, what is the time frame difference, if there is one? I know you said Akiya banks often take a lot longer compared to a regular realtor.
It depends on the Akiya bank and how, what sort of procedures and checklists they've got in place. Some of them require us to first, we contact them by phone.
They ask us to fill in a membership application form, which has to be done by papers. So we wait a week or two until they send us the papers, and then a week or two until they receive and process the papers. And then some of them have a waiting list of people who want to view the property, and they're not going to accept new viewings until the first viewing has been concluded and confirmed whether it's going ahead or not. So in those cases, it could sometimes take us 5-6 months just to get a viewing done.
Wow.
And obviously along the way,
I was just going to ask, the real estate agents operate the same way with the kind of first come, first served mentality?
Yes, but some of them, for example, if an offer was made and accepted under the listing price, and then somebody comes in at the listing price, or occasionally somebody even offers a bit more than that, it's quite rare in Japan. But so some of them will definitely, I mean, they'll give the original buyer a chance to up their price, but they're not going to automatically reject your higher offer. But some of them are, the more traditional ones are very, we already have an offer, it's ongoing, we're proceeding to signing, but we're not accepting anymore, which I guess to the seller, but if that's the way the agent is, then there's not much we can do about it.
Okay. Yeah. Looking at this property with the bamboo grove being that close,
yeah.
Are there issues with that? We have clumping bamboo here, which obviously wouldn't be the same type.
Well, I mean, I'm not from my just off my memory. You're not going to be spending the whole year there, so somebody will have to come in and do garden maintenance on your behalf as well, right?
No. So things have changed a bit. We're okay. Now looking to be there permanently from March.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, Aaron's working through his visa through with his work.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, permanent move. And I guess that comes back to your question before where you said how much of financial commitment and all of that. I mean, we're in this to move there and live in Japan for probably as long as we can. So, we're willing to put money into it, and ongoing money and maintenance is probably not as much of a concern for us.
Okay, and I guess some of the garden work you'll be DIYing, if not all of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Yep.
Well, and that does change this thing financially as well. But I mean, trees are trees. I'm assuming that trees require an expertise that, unless you're a landscaper in Australia, you probably don't have.
Of course.
Yeah.
So depending on the net, let me just translate that to see how much of the land is actually. Building 115 on land, which is, where's the land?
1363, public register.
Yeah, I don't think it tells.
It doesn't say how much of it is farm or forest, does it?
No.
Again, from like Google Maps and Earth and stuff, it looks like there's quite a lot of bamboo, and I assume that would be part of the land, but.
Yeah, but I mean, there's not, unless it's bordering on neighbors' properties or public roads, you can just leave it growing if it doesn't bother you.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
The only maintenance that you're forced to do is number one on anything overhanging public roads or neighboring properties.
Yeah.
And number two, you have to keep, you know, weeds under control so that there's no danger of vermin and so forth, right?
Yeah. Okay. Did you have anything else?
But those are the kinds of things that an in-person viewing will show us, right? So when we or you or the agent is walking around with their phone camera, then, you know, we can see where exactly the boundaries are, what's beyond them, and what's overhanging. They might say yes or no, but we'd really prefer an in-person viewing, either remote or in person, to confirm that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And if we were to say, yes, we love this one, please go ahead as much as you can in terms of getting information.
Yep.
What kind of time frame for a viewing, remote for us, obviously?
So again, this one doesn't look like it's on an Akia bank, I assume, unless sometimes the agents list.
No, I haven't found it.
Yeah. Sometimes the agent just lists them on behalf of the Akia bank, but then they would write it, and I haven't seen that in this listing. So
Hopefully less, up to a month to organize a viewing, hopefully less, but could be up to a month. Okay. If it can be done remotely, if we have to go there in person, then it's up to you if you want to pay for that or not. You're saying you're going to be here from March, so I'm assuming you'll want to finalize that before then and not lose that one if that's the one you love, right?
Yeah, definitely. So we are there mid-December to February as well for holiday and viewing of places if necessary.
Okay, but I mean, it's beginning of October now, so... up to you. I mean, it could be there until
ideally December. It would be sooner, but
hopefully it'll be there until December, but we don't know, right? When was it listed?
I only saw it last week, but
I don't think could've they say when the original listing was put in on these websites. No, they just give us the latest update and the next update. So yeah, anyone's guess, but normally it would take up to about a month to organize, which would bring you to early November if we can do it remotely. And then if not, then you can decide if, is this the one, let's assume the first one is, you know, might be a bit too pricey. Is this the definitely the one that you're in love with, or are you okay? Are you okay?
I'm not in love with it.
Yeah, it's certainly, it hits all the spots that we want to tick off, I guess. And
yeah.
Yeah, we hadn't really looked at Tokushima.
You'll definitely have to do the bathroom and toilet.
Yeah, definitely. That will be the first thing.
Bit below Australian standards.
It also, does it say whether, sorry, let me scroll down again. Does it say whether it's on city sewage or a septic tank? Or septic tank, right? So,
yeah.
So assuming it can't be connected to sewage, but it's, I mean, septic tank is not bad. It doesn't smell like the old school collection tanks and so forth.
Yeah. We grew up in a country town in Melbourne with septic tanks. So we're kind of used to those.
Yeah.
Okay.
In Japan, do you know, I mean, it might be different for municipalities, but how often collections are, is it just when you need it? Do you just organize it ourselves?
So with septic tanks, because they're bacterial, I mean, the way the refuse is being processed is via bacteria. So that needs to be maintained regularly, whether you're using it or not, usually twice a year. Twice a year. Once a quarter, I can't remember, but the total bill is usually 25,000 to 35,000 yen, unless it's really out there and not many companies get there. But normally, I mean, this is I mean, Tokushima should be okay, I think. Hopefully, not more than, let's say, 30,000-35,000 yen a year.
Yeah, cool.
I'll just check the list of questions. Okay, so on the top, I did have down, we've got a sort of prioritized list, and I think with Akiya Bank in particular, you don't want to make offers on multiple places, like you've said, and then do a
run. Not just with Akiya Banks. Don't do that with any agents, because if you happen to find... Yeah, because if you happen to find, for example, an area that you really like, there could, if it's pretty rural, there could be only two or three agents servicing that. If you get blacklisted by one of them, you're done with that area, and so are we and our future clients. So don't, I wouldn't do that.
Yeah,
I understand. So is there any part of that process that can run in parallel, given the short timeframes being March next year? We're obviously worried about time and how long it might take us to find a place to live when we arrive.
Well, I mean, so far you haven't been too picky with the, you know, with properties that you've been looking at. You were pretty quick to say that this one ticks all the boxes and so forth. So I doubt. I mean, the only thing that could potentially throw a wrench in the works is if the structural inspection comes back completely disastrous. In which case we will have, but I mean, we can ask questions about a new property. What I mean is just don't submit multiple offers at the same time.
Yes.
Yeah, we can definitely kick off the due diligence on one while we're trying to figure out the structural structural condition.
Okay.
Yeah, perfect.
Once you've submitted an offer, it's probably better to just pause and exhaust that avenue first.
I think we would operate the same way in Australia, really.
Yeah. What? So if we submit an offer and let's say the realtor says, yep, and the owner and all of that, how quickly do we have to come back to you with our yes, go ahead?
Well, if you submit an offer, it's assumed that barring
any conditions we've mentioned on the offer, you are going ahead. So we don't want to submit it. Like, the only condition I would see in most cases is maybe a structural inspection, right?
Yeah.
So don't leave that hanging on go ahead or not if you've already submitted an offer. Do all of that before you submit it. Because once we submit an offer, we should only be pulling it back if we actually found anything in that property itself that hasn't been revealed before, right?
Yep. And probably the better question I should have asked is, in the best case scenario, we submit the offer, how long on average, I know it's a piece of string, but how long do people generally take to say yes or no? Does that get dragged out at all?
If you haven't submitted too much off the listing price, so again, it's considered polite not to go beyond 10%, maybe 15% if there's a very good cause for that. Mm-hmm. As long as that's within that range, we'll usually hear back from them within a week, maybe 2 weeks at most.
Okay.
And for making offers, and again, it's a piece of string, but in your experience, how quick do we have to be when we see properties or whatever? Like, what's the market like in Japan at the moment in terms of this kind of house?
It very much depends, number one, on the location, and number two, on the sort of information that we get from the realtor, and obviously on the price. Same as with other properties in the cities, the most attractive properties do get snatched a lot quicker than the less attractive ones, but the window is just a bit longer. So something really attractive in the countryside that's vacant or semi-abandoned would normally be on the market at least a couple of months before someone puts an offer in, whereas something in the city could be on the market a matter of days before somebody puts an offer in, right? So that those are both good, what we would label probably good deals, and bad deals can stay on the market for years because you know, sellers are stubborn and they don't reduce the price.
Yeah.
But look, we have had some properties that, you know, somebody, even countryside rural ones, somebody expressed an interest in, and by the time the agent got back to us, within a couple of weeks, it was already gone. So it does happen, but it happens a lot less in the countryside.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
We interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, if that's still a thing, or if you just need somewhere quiet to get away from the world. They offer a variety of options for families, corporate relocations, or even if you're simply transitioning between homes in Tokyo. The properties are super comfortable, tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So really the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They come with fast, unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens. And they're just a delight to stay in. Fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know. They're tiny, they're noisy, fine for a night or two if you're on your own. But longer term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly in a Japanese business hotel. So if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home, with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, etc., you definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed minpaku or short-term stay operator. And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profit, or a holiday home that you want to rent out when you're not using it via short-term stays, drop them a line today, see how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth a visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at sales@realestate.jp. And now back to the podcast.
Okay. Well, jumping about a little bit maybe, but we've obviously identified some of these properties and prioritized them. You've mentioned that your staff can do a search as well for things. What kind of resources do you have that we wouldn't, and how does that all work?
None. The websites that I've sent to you are the ones. Once we've done a deal or two in a particular area, then we can hit up that agent and see if he's got anything that he just didn't happen to list yet. But usually, they usually just list them. So often we, you know, we look at a listing that you provided and we say, oh, yeah, we've worked with that agent. So it, there's not really any secret or off plan or anything, sorry, off market or anything that you wouldn't see on these websites. Yeah.
Yep. So.
And well,
you can definitely try some of the smaller websites, right? Like this one is not one of the big ones that I've sent to you. So you've obviously managed to just look for that area and look for a real estate company and find some other local websites like this one, right?
Yeah, we're delving into it as far as we can go, basically.
That's usually all that we do, to be honest. Sometimes, again, we get particular agents that we worked with, but that's more the case in the cities when our holiday home customers usually look in very different areas to each other. So we usually wouldn't have much experience unless it's a very popular area that we worked in before.
Talking about that Tokushima place, looking at the bathroom, assuming there's only one because we haven't seen a floor plan, how much, I know, again, piece of string, but how much are you budgeting for a bathroom renovation? Probably not a unit bathroom is what we're going for, something a bit different. But bathroom, kitchen, what's average?
The nicest bathroom that we've done to date was about 2.5 million yen from memory.
Yep.
Unit baths are usually 1 million or slightly under.
Yep. Okay.
A kitchen's a really nice one would be about 1 million yen, normally less than that. So let's call it 500,000 to 1 million.
Okay. And do you have access to contractors in all different areas? Because we can't speak perfect Japanese.
We have access to the internet, which is how we find them.
Okay.
But again, similar to agents, if it's an area, like for example, a lot of our customers buy around Kyoto, Nara, so we do definitely have some contractors that we always work with there. Tokushima, I don't think we've done anything yet, so we wouldn't. Oh, this one is, sorry, not. Yeah, that was Tokushima, right?
Yeah.
No, I don't think we've done anything there, so there we'll just probably start the research again.
Okay.
Yep.
And is that something that if we do, we give you the brief and say this is what we're after, and then that's something that your company can manage, or how does that work?
We can do it that way, or we can find a company, invite them over to the property and let them submit, because they'll often have ideas that you might not have, you know, thought about.
Yes.
And things that they know are easier to do and cheaper that will also save you money. So both ways work. I guess the best thing is if you give us a vague idea, like don't put anything cemented in stone and just say, okay, well, you know, we want a new kitchen, we want a new bathroom, we prefer not to have ABC, and then let them suggest based on that rather than, you know, just limit them to pigeonhole them into a particular quote, which they'll provide if you want it, but it might not be as cheap as you might think. Because some things are just not common here or difficult to get, or people don't have expertise in installing them. So it's better to start with a rough plan and let them help you fine tune it best to the best of their experience.
Yeah, perfect. Yep. Okay.
That's those ones. Additional purchase costs. So when you're buying a property, what sort of taxes and things should we be allowing for? Is it a percentage like 10% or?
It's a percentage range. So depending on the price of the property, it would vary somewhere between 15 to 20% worst case. If it's a pricier one. Sorry, that includes the realtor fee, which is 3% plus 60,000 yen plus tax. So for properties at this kind of price tag, it usually, with the 60,000, it usually works out to be something like 4.5-ish. Our fee, which you already know, which is, you're pretty close to our minimum fee anywhere. So let's call it approximately 5%.
Yep.
Then legal and registration fees vary between, for this price range, I'd say 2.5 to 4.5-ish. So that's legal registration and stamp duty, because that's based on the official evaluation of the property, which is always a little bit different to market price. So it's just a range that I can give you until we have anything more concrete.
Yep.
And the purchase tax, which you'll get, I mean, we calculate it as part of the purchase cost, but you'll only be paying it 6 to 24 months after the purchase, depending on whenever they send the statement. And that's going to be normally worst case about 2.5, 2.6%, usually closer to 1.5, slightly under 2.
Okay.
So the total worst case would work out to be 20%, hopefully closer to 15.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Okay. And land taxes every year, that sort of thing. Obviously it depends on area.
So as long as we're keeping the floor plan to under 200 square meters, so not including the first property we've looked at.
Yeah.
It would not be more than 1.5% of the purchase price normally.
Okay.
I would say between 0.5% to 1.5%, again, depending on the official evaluation.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Thank you.
Very reasonable.
Yep.
Which in this case, I think works out to be like up to $400 or something like that.
Yeah,
it's very different to Australia.
Yeah, yes, it is.
2,000, 3,000. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, you're buying properties that you wouldn't be able to buy anything this cheap in Australia, right? So everything scales down based on that.
Not at all. Yeah. So you've had property in Australia. Did you live in Australia
had,
as well?
Had. Yeah, we liquidated it shortly after we moved to Japan and bought about 8 investment units for the price of that.
Yeah. Wow.
So you lived in Australia, did you?
Yeah, I lived on the Gold Coast for about 10 years with a 6-month stint in Melbourne as well. The property that we liquidated was in Melbourne, in North Caulfield.
Ah, Caulfield, yeah.
Yeah,
I'm Jewish, well. Yeah. Fell by the nose.
Yeah.
In this one, it says farmland, forest, whatever. When it says farmland, I know that sometimes you need to be registered as farmers.
Or ask the seller to split that off the title. So the way it works is if it's under 500 square meters, it's just a procedure of converting it to forest or non-farmland, which is, you know, it's a few extra dollars when you register it, but nothing significant. Mm-hmm. If it's beyond 500 meters, the only thing we can do is to, assuming you're not going to be joining the farmer union, because some of them can be very, very foreigner shy, not to say non-farmer shy. So in those cases, we'll normally ask the seller if they would consider splitting the farmland off the title deed and just selling the rest of it. I'd say 50% at best would agree to that.
Okay. So could that be a deal breaker?
Absolutely.
If they don't want... Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep. But I mean, if it's listed on normal real estate websites and it doesn't specifically say the size of the farmland, it's usually safe to assume that it's going to be under that threshold. But that's, I mean, good. It's just an assumption. We won't know until we actually inquire.
Street view showed just a little orchard in the front of the house. Maybe that's what that is.
Yeah, who knows.
But anyway, the last one I had, and I don't know if Ali has more, but any other common gotchas for a foreigner or in this process buying an older house or anything like that?
That just disrupts timelines or money?
I mean, well, no gotchas in the sense that, you know, something is not disclosed and there's any nefarious activity in the background, nothing like that, but just the time frame. But again, you're definitely not looking at outright shacks in the far, far, far countryside for like 20,000-30,000. Those are usually where the buyer beware kind of thing comes in. With these, it's just a structural inspection, to be honest, just a matter of, and obviously you're looking at the location. So like you said about the motorway, just make sure that, you know, the location works for you. If there's anything that we don't know about the location, like, for example, if they're very foreigner shy or they don't like holiday home shoppers or whatnot, then the agent will normally tell us kind of gently and politely when we inquire that maybe that's not the best one for you because the community is very insular one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we always try to ask that, if you just remind me whenever we're making inquiries, just to confirm with the agent, even if they haven't told us, we'll just ask them if they know anything about the local community.
Okay.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
But obviously you're looking at
locations where you will really have to learn Japanese very quickly. Eh?
Yes. Yeah.
We're ahead of the game there a little bit. Ali more so than I, but so yeah. I've been getting lessons since the start of the year, really.
Pretty quick.
Oh, nice.
Okay. Yeah. So, it's been a long-term plan of ours to eventually live in Japan. We were married over there in 2010. And
awesome.
And visited many times. So, yeah, we love the place and we know we want to spend a lot more time there. So,
yeah. How do you work out your visas? What are you going to be doing here to be able to stay?
Are you familiar with Telstra in Australia? Yep. That's who I work for. And they have a really wonderful global mobility program. And we have an entity in Japan, so I can move my contract to that entity and be employed in Japan, but still do the same job I'm doing in Australia.
So when you say global mobility, do Telstra also help you with settlement, relocation? Do they have...
In certain cases, they can. When it's like this, where it's initiated by me, they leave that up to you to figure out. But they can help you with your visas. They'll help with Allison's spousal visa as well.
Okay. So my other company, Nippon Bridge, does relocation support services. So if that becomes a thing where Telstra has that need, we're very happy to provide them with it.
Interesting. There's a few more people doing it, actually. I think we've had 4 people in Telstra.
Into rural areas like you or into the cities?
A couple have moved into the city. One guy lives up in Nagano, in the countryside of Nagano, with his Japanese wife there. So a slightly different scenario there. But the others are moving into sort of Saitama in Tokyo and things like that. Our main office is in Tokyo. We've got one in Osaka as well. But I can work remote. So I guess internet is a key thing as well in any of these inquiries.
Of course,
And
anything's better than what we have here.
Japan's internet probably knocks ours out of the park. But
So
that's kind of the story, I guess. I didn't have any other questions at the moment.
I think only that particular property in Tokushima, it looks like in 2021, Street View, Google Earth, etc., it looks like around the corner there's some kind of tunnel road thing being built, but I don't know. Is that something that we would be able to get updated on if someone goes and looks at the property?
Number one, yes. But even before that, if you can mark on the location where you exactly you've seen that, then we can definitely ask the agent what that was and if that's done.
Okay. I just don't know about noise and whatever, so that would be good.
Mm.
Cool.
What's your experience with Tokushima itself?
None whatsoever. We haven't purchased a single property for a client there. There are so many prefectures in Japan where we haven't purchased a property on behalf of a client yet.
There's a lot.
Yeah.
Mm. And typhoons. What's your experience with typhoons?
Just that they're covered by insurance, so we don't really care that much.
That's a good point.
Very true. Because you're going to be living there on a more permanent basis, one of the things that we'll check as part of due diligence, and again, that's something that the agents will always disclose from the get-go, is whether the property is in a red zone for floods and landslides. That's the main, because earthquakes can't really be predicted, and we know some places are more prone than others, but I don't think Tokushima was particularly one of them. And also, typhoons can't really be, some areas have more, some areas have less, but there's always a typhoon season anywhere in Japan, so that's not something that can be avoided. Zoom's got about 2.5 minutes on it, so I can jump back in, but these days they make me wait 10 minutes to jump back in.
That's okay. I think we've
covered everything, I think.
You've been really helpful, thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much. Great to meet you as well.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Awesome. So I will wait to hear back from you on whether you want to either submit an offer, and I advise to make it, after we do maybe a remote viewing if we can.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do submit an offer, whether it's before or after the viewing, I probably put pending structural inspection on it just to be on the safe side.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Perfect. Yep. All right. We'll send you an email. Thank you.
Fantastic. Thanks for your time.
Thanks so much. Thank you. Have a good night.
You too.
Bye.
Bye-bye. So there you have it. Hope you enjoyed these two chats. Plenty of good info to think about and unpack there. And again, don't miss out on your early bird discounted tickets for the April 6th Japan Real Estate Summit Spring Session in Tokyo or via the stream. These will, again, only be available for a few days as of the publication of this podcast episode. So run over to nippontradings.com, click the registration page link at the top of the page, and secure your discounted tickets today. Now, before we go, we're also, as always, going to tell you and also link to our other sponsor's website. That's Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. If you're thinking about moving here on a more permanent basis, or you're already in Japan on some sort of a temporary visa, and you want to switch to a longer term or permanent one, or if you're considering setting up a local company or a branch office of a foreign company, and you've got any sort of business or visa-related inquiries, or even if you just want to find out what your options are on any of these topics, feel free to contact Hiroshi Shimizu. You can find him at japanimmigrationexperts.com. And he can help you set up a company, apply for any kind of visa, or just provide you with the best advice and extremely affordable consultation related to these topics. And he's already done that for many of our listeners. So feel free to reach out to him. Again, that's japanimmigrationexperts.com, and you'll be well on your way. And that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Do share it with your networks, and please let us know what you think. So leave us a short rating or review on the iTunes Store, on Spotify, or just drop us a line in the comment section of wherever you might have found this episode. We love hearing from you. Hope to have you with us again next time, and until then, have a great day or night ahead. Yoroshiku!